Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's go to the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline here on WCCO with our twice weekly visits with Dr. Michael Osterholm, and really appreciate his time this morning again here on WCCO. An infectious disease epidemiologist, author, Regents Professor, director, as you know by now, certainly for the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, David.
I got to ask you about the latest news, and that would be the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention considering changing the guidelines, Dr. Osterholm, for self-isolation to make it easier for those who have been exposed to someone with the virus to return to work if they're asymptomatic. I want to get your reaction to that and your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very much an evolving epidemic, as we all know, in terms of how do you actually make the kind of recommendations that do the most to protect the public's health, to reduce transmission, but allow us to live our everyday lives. And what I mean by that is not that we should be, comfortable and convenient necessarily when we're dealing with such a serious crisis, but at the same time, we have to keep our economy going. And that's not a dollars and cents issue. That's just the critical elements of food, medicines, police and fire. A good example is, has anyone ever figured out how to actually do remote garbage collection? I think that what we're trying to do is strike that balance. I've likened it to threading the rope through the needle. And so all of these are discussions about, how many people are likely to be infectious, when and where. We're now becoming much more aware of the fact that the transmission of this virus is likely in the earliest hours and days of your infection, and it's largely by just breathing. And so that allowing people to go back after so many days of either recovering from their illness or having been exposed makes great sense in terms of public health, and it also will do a lot to keep our everyday lives moving forward.
Has the social distancing worked?
Well, first of all, it surely has throughout the country, in the sense that in this temporary time period of shutdown, we've been able to reduce transmission. I think the challenge in answering that question in the more global sense is really borne out today in an article in the Wall Street Journal, which elaborates on a point that I've made on this show multiple times, is that Asia did not get this under control yet. And what I mean by that is they surely suppressed it in Wuhan, China. We saw Singapore really with a massive, extensive effort. Same thing is true in Korea, Hong Kong. And it's coming back in all those areas, including China. And so that, again, it comes back to the fact that we're going to be in this for the next 12 to 18 months. And this is what I worry about a lot at the national level. We're not telling the public that, and we need to tell them that this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. In 1918, transmission lasted for over 2 years of that influenza virus, and this coronavirus is acting very much like that. We saw the same in 1957 and 1968 with those pandemics. And so one of the challenges we have when you ask is social distancing working, or what I like to call physical distancing. I hope no one on this show ever is socially distant. We're going to really encourage that not happen. But the bottom line is that how do you maintain this for 18 or more months until we hopefully can get a vaccine? And I don't think we can. So what we're looking at is what really makes sense and works. For example, most young people will have very mild to moderate illness, very, very low number of deaths. Any death is a tragedy. But at the same time, bringing them back into society in a more normal way is exactly the kind of thing that will actually slow this virus transmission down eventually to those at highest risk. If suddenly 20 or 30 or 40% of your population is infected and recovers, they're now what we call kind of immune for any future infections. They're like rods in a virus reaction where they slow transmission way down. So we're still looking at what the best programs are, and that's what the governors are all struggling with right now, how to balance both of those. And I think they're really trying hard here in Minnesota. We're surely trying very hard to accomplish both.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned social distancing, Mike, because here at the station, the whole thing is we're trying hard to all say physical distancing. So thanks for bringing that up, because that is obviously a difference. I did want to ask you if there's any data in the studies, because last week we chatted about that, and you brought up some really interesting things. Anything new in the data that is catching your attention?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot made of the increased number of deaths among communities of color, particularly among blacks. And this is really very true. It is actually happening. I think the challenge we have is understanding why. And right now, when we look at the data, looking for the underlying occurrence of heart disease, diabetes, to some degree obesity, you know, we see a higher rate of that in some of our communities of color. And not that it's not present in the white community, it is. But I think that at this particular time, that we have to pay really close attention to that, because some cities right now, like Chicago, others are reporting more than 70% of the deaths are in the black community. And so this is all the more reason why we really have to focus on those areas of prevention and trying to prevent these people from ever getting infected. And so this is a huge challenge for us. I think the other thing is, and maybe we can talk about this at a later time, time is short here, but the whole idea of using masks and what does that all mean? And I, for one, believe that using these new cloth masks will have very little impact on this outbreak. And what I worry about is, because we're now recommending that as a public health community from the CDC, that's going to basically cause a lot of pressure on our already existing very short supply of surgical masks that healthcare workers must have. Right now, our healthcare workers are the first, second, and third lines of defense against this virus, and we're seeing them getting infected by the hundreds and dying. And so we have to do everything we can to protect healthcare workers. And I just don't want people out there trying to get a hold of surgical masks or these N95 respirators and taking them away from somebody who is trying very hard to save our lives.
Yeah, and we'll address that more on Monday when I get you back here on the show as well. Yeah. I did want to, just before I let you go, Dr. Osterholm, ask you about the University of Minnesota research. I know Mayo Clinic and University are working very close in finding these antibodies in people's bloodstreams and verifying they've recovered from the infections. I assume those tests are in limited supply, but what do you see for the future of that? How vital is that?
Well, I think right now the research that's being done at the University of Minnesota is very critical. There's a study that's set up, and anyone who's listening who thinks they have this illness, please let the university know, because of the fact that they're setting up a study looking at chloroquine as a drug. I think we've jumped far, far too fast into accepting that that is going to be an effective and safe drug. While time is of the essence, we don't have time to waste. We need to get these studies done. I have seen far too many experiences where drugs like this actually don't work, even though there's all this anecdotal data that they do. So the U is very involved with that. They're involved with a number of issues around looking at equipment and safety protection equipment for healthcare workers, how to make it quickly. So there's a lot going on at the University of Minnesota, and it's a time for me to be, as being there, and I have been for 45 years, even when I was at the State Health Department, I was at the U. I'm just so proud to be associated with this institution. They've been incredibly supportive of our work and doing what we have to do to take this on.
Well, we both look forward to the day that I could just focus on Gopher basketball and football and not worry about what's going on out there.
Can I just say one last thing, Dave? Again, we talk a lot about numbers. We talk a lot about what's going on, and these are all people. They're all loved ones. They're people who are dear to us. And, you know, I grew up on John Prine. I'm obviously disclosing my age here. But, his music was so important and so beautiful. And when he died last night from this infection, it just drove home again how many more people over the course of the next 16 to 18 months who have touched our lives are going to be lost to this virus. And we're going to see more.
Yeah, it's we'll stay up to date. I appreciate your time sharing that with us, Mike. Good to talk to you this morning.
Thanks. Talk to you later, David. Thank you. Bye.
Dr. Michael Osterholm here on WCCO, again at the University of Minnesota, the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy. WCCO time is 7:29. News coming up with Steve and an update from CBS. That's next.
Dave Lee.
Original, unbiased, fact-based. That's what you get from Ground Game, the latest podcast from the Associated Press. Hosted by AP's Washington Bureau Chief, Julie Pace. Ground Game discusses...